This is Capital Insider Extra, connecting Oklahoma people, policy, and politics. I'm Dick Pryor with the Capital News Director, Sean Ashley. And our guest is Preston Dorflinger, the Director of the Office of Management and Enterprise Services for the state of Oklahoma. Preston, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you guys.
So how does the Oklahoma budget look heading into the new fiscal year after a series of budget cuts over a period of time?
Well, Dick, I mean, we're going to be facing another challenging year. Experience here has mostly been challenging, and it's a great resume builder to have presided over some of the most challenging times in state government as far as our budget goes.
What brings about those challenges as we enter this fiscal year?
Many of the things that the governor and I have been talking about year in and year out contribute to our current situation and what we've been experiencing. Things like an over-reliance on one-time funds. We have issues with apportionment, or off the top, as we like to call it, monies that are going other places before they hit the general revenue fund. And then, you know, fundamentally, I think that there's some philosophical differences in the building about what level of funding for the core service of state government is appropriate, and have we realized all the efficiencies we possibly can within state government, while at the same time trying to make sure we're providing enough resources.
The governor put out a very broad plan in her executive budget for 2017 that included a number of suggestions of tax increases, elimination of the corporate income tax, and the sales tax on groceries. And really, at the end of session, a lot of those were not embraced. How do you account for that when you have Republicans controlling both chambers of the legislature and the governor's office?
Yeah, I think the broadening of the base, or the sales tax expansion, if you will, is hard for members, because it does feel like you're voting on a tax increase. But the thing that really gets lost in that is the fact that our economy has changed, and we are a services-based economy versus a goods-based economy. And a lot of the things that we all utilize as far as services goes these days, and that aren't taxed, weren't even in existence when our tax code was developed. But you know, I think a number of things go into play when members struggle. One simple answer to that is sometimes it's not going to be accepted just because it was the executive branch's idea. And, that's the way this game is played sometimes. But I think that history will record that maybe we should have been listened to a little more with some of the ideas that we presented year in and year out.
Preston, you mentioned apportionment, that's off-the-top spending, as being a problem. Now, a lot of that money is going to be going to agencies anyway. So why is it a problem?
Correct. And many of those resources do go to places that people care about, that the citizens, kind of regardless of party, agree are important and important functions of state government. But the thing that it does is it takes away a sitting legislature's flexibility to maybe shift priorities from year to year slightly. And again, at the end of it, they might still get the same level of resources, but on any given year, they might decide to tweak. And really, they're handcuffed in their ability to do that with so much money going off the top.
So is Oklahoma's financial issue more a revenue problem or a spending problem?
It is both. And I don't think in any organization, private or public, that you ever stop looking for efficiencies. And it's a misnomer to think that the governor hasn't continued to drive, you know, efficiency within state government. Again, this is politics, and you have various competing interests. There's an organization known as OCPA who I think would gut government if they could. And, the governor is fundamentally not going to let that happen. And I think we have to continually strive to make sure we're operating as efficiently as we can, but yet providing the appropriate resources for agencies like the Department of Corrections, for example, to be able to carry out their missions in a safe manner.
Corrections is having some real problems. Not that all agencies are not, but in particular, corrections and criminal justice reform stalled out during this last legislative session as well.
It did. And again, we meet regularly with the Speaker and Pro Tem and House and Senate leadership and try to find those areas of common ground to move the state forward. And it is a challenge, even with a single party having control. There's still a lot of differences of how we should be approaching funding of state government. But I don't think anyone can argue that we've got some catch-up to do on appropriately funding places like DOC, like DHS still, and other parts of state government as well.
Some of the challenges you have left over from the 2017 legislative session are legal challenges. Four of the revenue bills that provide money for this budget are being challenged at the Supreme Court. What will be the executive branch's approach if one or any of those are ruled unconstitutional?
Yeah, so we're, of course, watching, like everyone else, the Supreme Court is scheduled to hear oral arguments on those issues. I can tell you that the governor's position, particularly on the cigarette fee, is if that were to be thrown out, we are not going to allow those agencies that would be affected by that that money being pulled out of the budget. We're not going to allow them to sustain the type of cuts that they would, because, Sean, you'll remember, this is a little different. If that money, if that revenue is thrown out, it's not going to cause me in my official capacity, like in other situations, to cause across-the-board cuts. There are about three agencies that take very severe hits to their budgets if that revenue is thrown out.
What do you think the budget will look like for the next fiscal year?
Well, we're going to go in, fortunately, our most recent revenue report shows that collections are, upticking, but it's so volatile right now and so fluid that I believe we'll go in with an artificial hole that we, of our own creating, this year, just like we have the past several years, again, because of the over-reliance on those one-time funding sources. So it will be challenging, and I think the reality is this is a political environment and it's an election year. And so we'll be dealing with that as well as members try to grapple with their conscience as to whether they should be providing additional revenue or not.
From time to time, we have seen revenue failures declared for the current fiscal year. What causes that?
This is one of the great things about the way the state is managed from a fiscal standpoint. And again, we're having challenges. But overall, the state is recognized frequently for good fiscal management, and that's not a reflection of Preston Dorflinger. It's things that have been put in place statutorily or frameworks for whoever is in my chair to operate within, one of those being the fact that we have to live within a balanced budget. So if something occurs that looks like we're going to be outside of that balanced budget parameter, then my capacity is charged with reducing state budgets to the state agency allocations to allow us to remain within budget. And in this case, collections were coming in a way that looked like we were going to experience a revenue failure, and that's why we caused the reductions to happen.
So there were cuts, but by the end of the year, you saw more money available, and this time around, you were able to give some of that money back.
Yeah, we were able to give back approximately $34, $35 million. That's not a lot. But if you look at the overall picture of what happened with the state's revenue this session, and of course there was some controversy around some borrowing that, again, I have the authority to do in my capacity. If you look at it holistically, I would suggest to you and your listeners that the way the state is managed financially played out exactly the way that it's supposed to, or the way that it's designed to.
The limit on the rainy day fund, does that need to change?
I think that is one of the areas you could look at as well within the overall management of state finances. Now, I will tell you, it had $2 and let's say it had $2.03. I can't remember for sure. It will no doubt have $4.06. We will have doubled the amount of rainy day fund money by the time we leave. All kidding aside, I mean, it had $2 in it when we came. I mean, we saw it increase, and fortunately, we've had it available to us as a resource to try to weather some of these challenges. We would have rather not seen it drained, all kidding aside, and have it still be available. But I think you've seen some things that over the long term have been put in place. The Incentive Review Commission, I think, is a very positive thing that has occurred within state government. There is a second fund now. I can't remember what it's actually called, but it is designed to help the next time that this happens. And we all know in Oklahoma there will be a next time when we get out of this current downturn. But I think we need to continue to provide whoever is sitting in these chairs the tools to be able to make state finance work that much better.
Back during the oil bust, I looked at some numbers one time, and about 36% of state appropriations came directly from the gross production tax on oil and natural gas. Now we hear the state chamber and other organizations mention that about 22 to 25% of our overall revenue collections are tied to the energy sector. Is the state's revenue and state government, therefore, too dependent on energy-related taxes? And is that perhaps a reason to make changes to our tax structure to better diversify our collections?
I think you're spot on. And for all the efforts, and there have been, there's been a lot of positive movement within our state's economy to diversify. I think the sheer percentage of how much of the state's revenue is derived directly or indirectly from the oil and gas industry indicates that we still have work to do. A lot of debate around this, even in discussions of increasing the gross production tax. Some people would say, well, why would we increase tax on something that we're already overly dependent on as a state? So I think there are plenty of opinions to go around, but we've got to continue to diversify the overall economy, and we've still got to look at comprehensive tax reform, Sean. We really do. Corporate income tax, as I've noted several times, is the most volatile source of revenue. It really should be eliminated. I get that people think somehow, some way, that's a corporate benefit that others don't receive. But it's very hard on state finance and trying to manage the overall complexity of our budget situation with a revenue source that's that volatile. And if you did away with it, you do away with a lot of other things that come with it, incentives, credits, et cetera.
And I believe Tony Maston pointed out, the director of the Oklahoma Tax Commission, in a recent legislative hearing, that about two-thirds of corporations in a given year don't pay any corporate income tax because of that structure.
It's true. And then you have another large percentage of filers whose obligation is $1,000 or less. And I would suggest that if you did away with corporate, a few things happen. You take a burden off of those corporations who are having to spend resources on filing those returns for $1,000 or less of an obligation to the state, and you free up resources at the tax commission to maybe focus on other areas of compliance and things like that by not having to process those returns.
The development of the state budget is a long, involved process, and it's a mystery to many people, including some people in the state Capitol building. So how does it really play out, Preston, when you get halfway through the legislative session and people are really starting to look at this very seriously and meetings are being held and the pace accelerates? How does that actually work? Who's in the room and how are the decisions made when the budget is finally put together and rolled out?
Well, Dick, I'd love to tell you, but I can't. No, I'm kidding. And I don't want to perpetuate the idea of, the whole idea of things happening in back rooms and there's no smoking allowed at the Capitol. So they're not smoke filled back rooms anymore. But I'd like to approach your question a different way. I think under this administration, we have provided more education and shed more light on the process than maybe any other time. I think people are more educated about the budget, and I think when they're asked in polling what things are important or that are concerned, budget is one that always shows up. And I don't know that would have been the case. I'm not sure citizens and even members of the legislature historically have been as engaged as they are now. But to answer your question, at the end of the day, it is still a relatively small group of people ultimately coming together. I mean, the House and the Senate have both done great jobs, I think, engaging their members more than maybe they have historically. But when it gets down to the very intense negotiations, it's a relatively small group, i.e. the Speaker of the House, the President Pro Tem of the Senate, the Governor. Of course, I'm there with her and each of those legs of the three-legged stool have, staff members and various people helping bring together what ultimately becomes the state budget.
The new fiscal year in Oklahoma begins on July 1st, so agencies typically don't find out how much money they're going to have available for the upcoming fiscal year until the session ends, at least the last couple of weeks of the session typically. which puts them in a bit of a hardship most years. Why does it take so long to develop the budget?
Part of it is just that engagement that I was talking about with, you know, the House and Senate having various committees and subcommittees on budget and their interactions with the agencies. But I'll fundamentally tell you that there's no reason why it has to be done in the late hours. And I'm one who believes that in anything, the type of work product you end up with when you're doing something in a compressed time frame is not going to be the best. And every year there are things that are that emerge from the process that really the only word I would know how to describe it would be are sloppy, and we can do better. And hopefully, you know, on any given year to year, and as people become more engaged, and again, members are paying attention more than they have, we can reduce that time frame and produce a budget earlier in session than what has historically happened from year to year.
You have talked from time to time about how you would like to see the budgeting process changed. So if you could lay out the plan, here's how to make it better for the state of Oklahoma and its people, what would it look like?
Well, multi-faceted, and how many more segments do we have?
We'll keep on going.
Okay. I'll give you the Reader's Digest version. You know, we do need more engagement. We need, for sure, members to engage with agencies and become more educated about agencies and their operations, first of all. Then, as they approach those committee meetings with agencies, we need to take a deeper dive into what's happening in agencies. And then the other thing I would tell you is an initiative that the governor and the executive branch have driven, and that's a move towards performance-informed budgeting, and that we're really aligning the goals of the state with agency priorities and tying funding to those priorities and making sure that we're getting results for the resources we provide to agencies.
And how would you fix the structural problems?
Well, I'm starting to feel a little bit like a broken record, but I mean, year in and year out, we bring those solutions in the executive budget and present to the legislature. And again, it is those things of let's stop relying on one-time sources. Let's just stop doing it. It's a horrible practice, and it causes any number of problems. Let's look at the apportionment issues. And then I'd say the other pillar is let's really look at comprehensive tax reform.
About a year ago, the governor held a press conference where she announced some changes to her staff and said at that point, with two legislative sessions remaining, she was beginning to think about her legacy. Now there's one legislative session remaining, a little more than a year in her tenure. What do you think, from the budget office's standpoint, her legacy will be, and what would you like it to be with 1 year to change it?
Yeah, well, you know, I think this is something I do give considerable thought to. I can tell you when we came into these roles, like a lot of people who want to be of service to our state, we wanted to leave it better than we experienced it. We've had some really challenging times financially. But if the legislature would join us and take action on many of the initiatives she's proposed, I know she wants future administrations to not have to go through these same painful cycles. And if we could get action on those initiatives, then it's going to be better when the economy does turn. It's going to be that much better. So I know for her that, of course, she wants things to be better than they were when we received them. I think there's no doubt that one of her legacies is going to be in the area of transportation. Governor Henry might have been the education governor, but Governor Fallon certainly has done great things in the area of transportation, addressing our deficient bridges and roads. I think history is going to describe part of her legacy of... It's too bad that the legislature and others didn't hear her and take action on the things that she was trying to propose.
Preston Dorflinger, Director of the Office of Management and Enterprise Services. As always, thank you.
Thank you.
Nice visiting with you.
Likewise.
That's Capital Insider. I'm Dick Pryor, along with Sean Ashley.
Thank you, Preston. Thank you, Dick.